Life Audio.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Happy Rant podcast. I want to tell you about our partner, Visual Theology. If you go to visualtheology.church, you can check out the full slate of resources that they offer. Visual Theology is one of the best biblical and theological resourcing sites on the internet. There's digital resources, there's print resources, and as you can tell by the name, they are visually inclined. So the idea is beautiful, well-imagined design to help us understand the Bible and theological concepts better, taking difficult passages of scripture, big theological concepts, and putting them into a visual form, whether that's in a book or on a poster or on a t-shirt, that allows us to better grasp what those mean, along with some really clear written biblical teaching. So if you're a parent, if you're a teacher, if you're in ministry, especially youth ministry, college ministry, if you're a small group leader, or if you just want to understand the Bible and theology better, visit visualtheology.church and use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout for a 20% discount. You will be astounded at the quality of the design as well as the clarity of the teaching. It is an incredibly helpful collection of resources. So again, visualtheology.church and use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout for a 20% discount. I also want to let you know that we have a Patreon site. For those of you who aren't familiar, Patreon is a site that allows listeners like you to support content creators like us financially. We joke a lot about being big business mavens and how much money we make on this podcast. The answer is we actually don't make very much money on this podcast at all. So the financial support that many of you already give and that we would love more of you to give is really helpful for covering our production costs, for doing spin-off things like our sports show, for doing live events, all of which have a cost attached that would otherwise come out of our pockets. So if you go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/happyrantpodcast, you can check out our site. What you'll find there is a chance to give any amount monthly, could be a dollar, could be $1,000, at different tiers. We will send you free signed books. And then here's the kicker. We do bonus podcast episodes exclusively for our Patreon supporters. We try to do them weekly. It probably comes out to be more like 35, 40 times a year. We've done over 50 of these since we opened our Patreon account. So you have all of that backlog. These are exclusive. We don't release these in the normal feed, except occasionally, exclusive for our Patreon supporters. So again, go to patreon.com/happyrantpodcast. And we would love it if you were able and willing to support us for any amount monthly. Lastly, I want to highlight our sports podcast. Ted and I do a sports podcast. It used to be part of this feed, and for some of you, it was a highlight. For others of you, you were like, skip that mess. Well, it is its own thing now. So you're welcome to those of you who don't like sports. For those of you who do, go to wherever you get podcasts and search Happy Rant Sports. Please subscribe to it. Share it with friends. You'll be familiar with it. We're not analysts, we're not reporters, but we do some analysis. It's a lot of fan interaction. It's what we love about sports. It's how sports interact with life. We talk a lot of nostalgic sports, what we used to love, how we played growing up, how we became fans, those kinds of things. We'd love it if you listened. It's a really good time. Just go search for Happy Rant Sports wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, my partner in Monday morning radio, Ronald J. Martin. Baby, it's you and me. No pipe today. This is unusual.
It's not very unusual.
That this scenario happens for us in our radio lives, and yet here we are.
I know. A couple times a year, usually Pipe is the he's the standby, and one of us is usually kind of out and about, and today it's Pipe. He's the one that's out and about.
Dude, where is he? Do you know what he's doing?
You know, he mentioned it last week, and I think you and I, as usual, literally didn't hear a word he was saying, so I have no idea.
Yeah, we're a little focused on ourselves.
Yeah, just a tad.
Just a smidge, baby. You know, nothing wrong with that.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, baby, I've got a movie thing to run by you.
Yeah.
And I want to get your take on this, see if you've seen this picture. Mm. KK and I tried to watch the Elvis movie last night.
Oh, dude, yeah. Okay.
And I absolutely hated it. And I turned it off after an hour. I was so bored. And I hated it for a specific reason. And that reason is that it was made by Baz Luhrmann.
Okay.
Who's a director who, as it turns out, I don't like. He's only made one thing that I've liked, which was the Romeo and Juliet thing with Leo like 30 years ago.
Yeah, where it was like modern times, but they were speaking in Shakespearean lingo.
Yes, which in and of itself felt stylized enough to sort of match the stylized nature of the Baz Luhrmann experience. But the other good thing about that Shakespeare movie was he had to keep some fidelity to the original manuscript.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I think they went line by line. So that kept it kind of on the rails as movies go. But this Elvis thing, dude, have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. And I don't even know. Before we get into that, I have not seen it, but kind of clue me in with more. Give me the filmology of Baz. Give me some more movies that he's
done.
Yeah,
Moulin Rouge was a Baz. Okay. The Great Gatsby was a Baz, which I kind of liked. But his deal is they're all super bright. They're all super stylized. They're super over the top. They kind of
extravagance. He kind of takes the classics and makes them those extravagant like stories.
It's extravagant, and every set piece looks like a stage set. You know what I mean? So it looks fake in a certain way. And the thing that he does that annoys me the most, this Elvis movie was like a 3-hour like highlight film. Like it's always cut, 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 cut.
Okay,
you're never really in the story. You're just getting like a montage for 3 hours, and I bailed on it, even though I was interested in, like, I really wanted to know the story of, like, Elvis's shady manager, and Tom Hanks was in it. They turned Tom Hanks into, like, Goldmember from Austin Powers, Goldmember. They gave him a terrible accent and, like, jowls.
Yeah, which I never think, I mean, this is going to be blasphemy to some people, but
yeah.
I think when Tom Hanks, I mean, with the exception of honestly maybe Forrest Gump, where he really was just Tom Hanks, I feel like whenever Tom Hanks is trying to be like a character, he's just not the guy to pull that off. That's my opinion. No. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
He just needs to play like a standard guy.
Tom Hanks.
He's really good at that.
Yeah.
Like he was great as, I don't know, the guy in Apollo 13, and he was great as Joe Fox in You've Got Mail or whatever, but
His most like Tom Hanksian kind of roles, like just even like that thing you do, right? The really nice, cool, like everybody loves a manager, but you know, with some edge, but he was still being very Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I feel like almost anybody of a certain age would have been better in this movie than Tom Hanks. And that's not a knock on Tom Hanks. It's just I didn't like the movie, you know?
Yeah.
It was heavily hyped. Yeah,
it's gotten great reviews, baby. I mean, the thing is, like, it's not for lack of people loving it, because I've read some really great reviews on it. So I do not like Elvis at all. I have no interest in Elvis. I don't like his music. It does nothing for me at all. Having said that, I kept going back and forth on wanting to see the movie, because I would probably be more interested in him as a character than anything musically, just personally speaking. But now, you tell me this, man. Did they... Yeah. I mean, did it chronicle his whole life all the way to the 70s before he died? Like, what parts do they get into?
Yeah, so basically, well, we only watched an hour, so I have to caveat with that. Like, we only got
you never got that far. You were like, you got up to 1959.
I think it basically chronicles his entire career in that the premise was he had this manager who basically screwed him over financially, but you're kind of invited to wonder whether he would have gone anywhere without the manager. You know what I mean? So it was one of these, like, yeah, the guy took a lot of his money, but would he have made any money to begin with without this guy, you know?
So what was their, that's fascinating. So like what was, I mean, Elvis is, I mean, there's few people that could have possibly made more money and gotten more fame and acclaim and legendary status than Elvis in the world. So what is the argument they're making with this like shifty manager?
Yeah. And I never really got deep enough to even know all the arguments that they were making, but I think there was a sense of this guy took too much.
Okay.
He drove Elvis too hard.
Okay.
You know, Elvis,
which is probably true.
Like, the drug and alcohol thing. And this guy was just like,
he was feeding it.
He was feeding it, and he was like, who cares? Just
he's profiting off
it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And again, and let me caveat, obviously Elvis being the legend he is, just because he became that doesn't mean he was okay that he had a really corrupt manager. I'm not saying that, but,
no, totally, yeah. Totally. And like you, I have very little actual interest in Elvis, you know, him being, you know, from Tupelo, which is like 2 hours away, and then Memphis, which is like an hour away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Save for, I'm always down for kind of an interesting entertainment business story.
I am too. I dig it. That's why I'm kind of still interested in it, but I don't know.
You should give it a watch, dude. Maybe you'll get deeper in it than me. But to me, there was this like weird ADHD thing with it where I was just settle down and get into the story.
Like it was the way it was shot more for you that was taken away from it.
Yeah. And like you never got more than like a sentence and a half of dialogue. It was always Elvis like leaning against a wall being like, well, mama, I am never gonna let you down. And then they'd cut to like 15 clips of his performances and it's like, just calm down, like give me a scene. I want to see a whole scene where like two people are saying things.
It was almost like Elvis made for the generation that can't like concentrate because they got their device in one hand while they're watching the movie, right?
Sure. And it had all the ingredients, right? Like the kid who played Elvis, you can't say anything bad about him right now. So it's I get that it's reviewing well. He's kind of bulletproof.
Was he good? I mean, just for what they gave him, was he good?
I'll say this. He was good as a very stylized Elvis.
Almost like he was trying, like a guy who's acting like Elvis?
Yeah, if it was like Elvis, if you filter him through kind of the lens of, I don't know, My Chemical Romance from like the early 2000s or whatever.
So kind of like the new Batman where Robert kind of plays like, you know, goth bat, like sort of like I'm.
Yeah, super emo, super goth, like mental health Batman.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah.
Like that kind of a guy. But
was he able to, I'm just curious. I mean, do you think, okay, so he captured a certain, like, would you say like, part of Elvis, like a particular kind of personality that we know about Elvis? Do you think it was just kind of narrow is what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he captured, like, they tried to do the thing where they really leaned into Elvis selling sexuality as a marketing tool for the
being person. The first guy to do that, basically.
Being the first guy to do that, being the first guy to like make the performance more about sexuality than like even the music.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of got that concept across pretty well. So, but again, like how many shots of like girls screaming in concert halls do I need? You know, like I get that. Like I was already on board with that part of the Elvis experience and I just wanted a little more story, I guess.
Was his, do his other movies have kind of a touch of that? Like Gatsby and
they do. Yeah.
Okay.
They do.
So so he kind of has that rapid fire style shooting.
Yeah.
Where
he
it's
has
like,
that rapid fire almost. And he almost always does like, they're basically half musicals. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Where there's a lot of singing. And I hate musicals. I don't know where you're at on musicals. But
it depends. Seriously, it just depends.
Yeah. I feel like to me, a musical, it fails at being a concert video and it also fails at being a movie. So I'm like, what am I even watching?
Why am I here?
Yeah, it's a bad movie and a bad concert video now. So I'm out. But I don't know. It's its own thing though. And I wish they would give the script to a normal director and let somebody else do another cut of the movie. And I would choose to watch that cut.
Did you see that? I don't know if it was a biopic. Did you see that Elton John thing that came out like a year and a half ago?
Dude, I didn't. Okay. Who made that?
I forget who made it, but I think it got really good reviews. I just didn't know if you saw it. But
there's another guy though that I have no interest in. Like I know there are people that are really super fired up about the Elton John thing. And there are certain Elton John tracks that I absolutely love.
Yeah, same. I just have no interest in him, though. I think as somebody, I'd want to learn about his story. There's not a lot of interest there for me for whatever reason. I don't know why. But
let's do it. No, I know. It's strange, isn't it? Let's do a minute on that. Like whose story would you be interested in watching a movie of? And let's do music as a category, and then maybe we can do it like a more broad category, because this is kind of fascinating. It's a short list for me. It really is.
Yeah, probably for me too. Like, who would you say would be at the top for you?
Gosh, I don't even know. Let's do music. Who would be at the top for me for music? It's got to be somebody whose like ascension narrative is interesting. And the thing about a good music movie is that it engages people on a lot of levels that we would find interesting from like a, I don't know, pastoral or like Christian perspective of,
yeah,
you know, chasing a certain kind of experience won't satisfy you. So it has to be kind of mature on that level.
Yeah.
Okay. So another one of these that I hated that I thought I was going to love was Oliver Stone's The Doors from the 90s.
Oh, right. Yeah. Dude, seriously, I never saw that because I don't care about The Doors.
I didn't care about The Doors either, but I was into it on the level of, oh, a movie about a big band, you know, so this will be cool. It was awful, dude. And that was maybe more a function of like...
That got good reviews, though, too. You know, the thing is, like, it's funny. I don't know, man, because that was such a long time ago. But
yeah.
I probably have more interest in Jim Morrison than I do The Doors as a band. You know, because he was an interesting character that I really don't know anything about.
Yeah.
And it just kind of passed me by. I literally don't remember why, because that was like 30 years ago now. But I know that... it was a good performance, though, wasn't it?
It was a great performance by Val Kilmer. Yeah, and it kind of begged the question, was Jim Morrison actually a good poet, or was he just a good-looking, like,
just kind of a hack,
buffoon with charisma, you know? And it was probably the latter, you know?
Probably, which is where it's blasphemous to say that, I know. Because, well, they did... I mean, again, you look at what their output was and how they changed music and who they influenced, and that's huge. I mean, you can't... That's undeniable. Whatever you want to think about.
I have no actual interest in their music.
Yeah, I don't either. I just don't. You know, I'll tell you a band that which would probably surprise a lot of people because I don't care about their music, but as a band, I've read a lot about them and I have a ton of interest in them, and it's Led Zeppelin. And I think it's because of, there was such a mysterious and, they dabbled in the occult.
Yeah.
And there was just this weird kind of spooky, kind of like otherworldly vibe about who they were and what they did. And at the time that they came into, you know, they definitely broke a lot of rules and they did a lot of like things that people are still copying today. And so as a band, I find them incredibly fascinating. Even the recordings I find fascinating. Do I listen to Led Zeppelin? Literally never, but as a band, super interested in them. They've made a lot of like different kind of documentaries and things of them. I'd be interested in like a full blown, like, let's get really great actors and do something on them.
That'd be fascinating, dude. And they were interesting in that they had like major artistic credibility, but they played like massive like stadium shows.
Oh yeah. Know? They were huge. They were just
massive. And they had two sort of strong personalities in the driver's seat, which almost never works, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I guess the Rolling Stones had that too, you know. But
they did. They did. Yeah. It was the classic like guitar and singer-songwriter combo where they wrote the songs and they were the personality of the band and they just drove it and everybody just got on board.
Here's what I'd watch a movie about, dude, is that dynamic. Like, how does that work? How do you make it work when you have two people on a project who have really strong visions and the relationship doesn't just explode, you know? How does it happen?
Yeah, I would love, that's a great point, dude. I would love to see, like, forget about doing a biopic on Led Zeppelin, the band. Just do a story on Plant and Page and how they wrote Led Zeppelin 4.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great point. Like, I think the best biopics are the ones that like, they don't try to tackle the whole life. They give you
the story of
Led Zeppelin 4. So they give you like a year, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where they're all holed up in that like haunted house and they're writing,
yes, dude.
They're writing Stairway to Heaven and there's like ghosts coming out of
drugs,
the walls. And
like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's right. They're like reading like satanic Bibles and, you know, do, right.
They're
it's
reading
like,
satanic Bibles. They're doing a bunch of drugs. Give me a couple minutes on if the house is actually haunted or are these guys 100%. Are just so like bombed out of their trees that they think it is. You know,
probably
like,
both. Probably yeah, both.
I'd be into that, you yeah. know? And even like, here's another dynamic that I'd be into. The sort of the expectations of the rock star, especially in the
yeah.
70s, in terms of decadence, like, were they that way because it was the expectation, or were they that way because they were that way? You know what I mean? Like, if one of them had just been like, you know what, I really don't want to do drugs and have a bunch of sex. I just want to watch TV or read
yeah.
a book or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I would be interested in that. I just think there was this huge, like, cultural expectation back then.
I love that, man. I would love to get behind the music on all that stuff. No pun.
I would too.
And
yeah.
And I also love, you know, I would also love, this is going to sound really weird. I'd love a story on a band that was huge that in a sense nobody cares about. So if somebody ever did something on like the rise of Journey, I'd probably
yeah.
be super into that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they were a band that I think like they were so I've read like stuff on them. They were super all like business-like. So they were like,
yeah.
no, nobody's doing drugs. Nobody's getting all messed
yeah.
up because we have one goal and that's to like make it.
Yeah.
And so they just made it and they did it, you know,
yeah.
so they were just like workers. They just
yeah.
grinded it out. And before they
yeah.
know it, after a few years, they're playing stadiums and, you know,
yeah.
the whole thing. So that is super fascinating to me where it's like, hey, we're here just to write songs, play shows, put money in the bank, and we're going to avoid all those cliches because this is actually what we want to do. And we don't
yeah.
want to like, burn out and we don't, you know, all that kind of, all the cliches that happen with bands. That,
no, that's
that
really fascinating.
Stuff. And I would
and
love
they're
that.
Interesting too, in that like, nobody's going to say Journey stinks. You know what I mean? Like nobody's dying on that hill, but nor is anybody saying like Journey's the most important band of the last 50 years. You know, I mean, so they hit. And again, if what they set out to do was be successful and get played on the radio a lot and do a lot of lucrative tours, then they did it.
They did it. They nailed it. Yeah.
They
right. There's not a lot of, I mean, they were just a very standard FM radio band from the late 70s, early 80s that sounded like literally hundreds of other bands. They just
yeah.
wrote catchier songs. And guess what? Nobody else wrote Don't Stop Believing. They did.
Yeah.
And they did it. And so that to me is so fascinating. I would,
yeah.
I'd love to get behind that. I'd love
yeah.
to hear something on that.
It's just pleasant music. You know what I mean? It's like Boston or, you know,
yeah,
like
it's all those bands. They all sound
right.
identical, right? It's just,
right.
it's kind of like now. It's like every era where there's
it
yeah.
is.
And they
yeah.
just rose to the top and they were focused. And so, yeah, I think even stuff like that to me is like super, super fascinating only because, I'm fascinated by a band. I don't know. This is going to offend somebody. I'm fascinated
yeah.
by a band that bland that actually like rose to the top. And there's bands like that all the time. So, I mean,
well,
granted,
okay, though,
yeah.
but that actually, it speaks to some degree to what audiences want, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And if you're hanging your hat on being, I don't know, different. So take a band like Nirvana, right? You know, when that first like huge Nirvana record dropped, it wasn't for everybody.
Yeah.
And it even took, you know, guys like me who are kind of in the target demo, who listened to a lot of like rock and metal, like prior to that.
Yeah.
It took me a few listens to it to go, is this for me?
Yeah.
And to even figure out like the cultural calculus of, is this for me? You know? And then you could kind of like make your choice about it, but it was that different. But I think everybody listened to Journey and went, this is for me to some degree. You know what I mean? Like
it was just so unoffensive. And that's,
yeah.
it's like music. It's like wallpaper. You walk in, it's playing, you don't even know it's playing.
Yeah.
And, but it's doing something. It's enhancing whatever activity you're involved in, whether that's drinking coffee, washing the dishes, or painting
or like
the wall.
Painting a room or cutting
exactly.
the grass or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
It's just there. It makes
there.
You feel good. The melodies are catchy. You know, they're doing it. They're doing what they know they need to do to keep the good times rolling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
this conversation kind of speaks to the storytelling that happens around a band. I mean, I could imagine there would be a world in which, let's say, some credentialed rock journalist, you know, kind of attaches himself to Journey and starts doing this storytelling about what amazing artists they are, or about like their process. You know what I mean? And it's like,
oh, you mean like the, in actuality, these guys were amazing artists. Nobody understands that
narrative. Yeah. Right. In actuality, these guys were amazing artists. Nobody understands it. I mean, if you could sell that, that would be really fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're talking about, I don't know, the front man for Journey in the same kind of hushed tones that you
Steve
talk
Perry.
About.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve Perry. Exceptional voice, dude.
Like, yeah. I mean, all exceptional musicians. I mean, that's not really ever the case, right? Everybody can play. That's never the big deal because everybody's good players, right? So it's.
Yeah. Everybody's good. So I don't know. Maybe that's the story that gets told. Like, hey, these guys, they were all really good at what they do. They were all like 80th percentile artistically. Like they weren't so creative that they were shooting themselves in the foot. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Exactly.
And because even you take a band like Pearl Jam that they hit in that like radio friendly wheelhouse like 60% of the time.
Yeah.
But the other 40% of the songs you're like, eh. You know, it's the song's 9 minutes. It's not gonna get played on the radio. So toss that one out. Or the you know, for whatever reason, they're shooting themselves in the foot, probably by choice once in a while. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting. I mean, it's like, it's such a different world now too. You know, I mean, bands could write their radio hits. Like, here's our four radio hits. The record company's happy. These are the ones are going to push as singles. And then guess what? We have six other songs on the record that we can kind of do whatever we want with. You know. And that's kind of the standard format for years and years. I mean, that's all different now. Now it's kind of gone back to the 50s now where everything's kind of just a single because everything just gets released on its own and people download it. And so it's actually gone full circle in a weird way. But I think what's different now is that I think we've talked about this on the show, and this kind of keeps us on point, which is that it's, you know, when you got things like Instagram and everybody's letting everybody like watch them put socks on in the morning, it's kind of taken away the mystique of like what these guys used to have, which was a little bit of like a little bit of mystery, you know, and intrigue.
I mean, the best thing about Led Zeppelin in the 70s is that you weren't seeing them every day.
Oh, dude.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they could say that they were, and you would get like a newspaper story from like some London paper about how Led Zeppelin is holed up in a haunted like castle.
recording their new album. Right.
Recording their new album, and they're doing a lot of drugs, and like, you know, two of them are fighting, and that's all you would get. That's all you would get for like a month, right? And then, you know, somebody sees them at a club, and maybe you get like a snapshot of that. And it was mysterious, baby. And I miss that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I like a world in which the rock star is sort of elevated just by nature of like, you're not seeing them.
Yeah.
And I mean, if Led Zeppelin's around in 2022, like, I don't know, you're watching Robert Plant, like, you know, put socks on in the morning. And 3 years ago, he's telling you to wear a mask. And like, you know, it's not fun anymore. Like, he's not a rock star.
He's not above the mundane, which is kind of what rock stars got presented to us, probably starting with Elvis, which was they are not living the same lives we are, which is why we're fascinated by them, and we actually want to give what they do like some matter of attention.
Correct.
It's so interesting. You know?
You and I kind of grew up on the tail end of that.
Yeah.
So we caught the tail end of it in that you had artists like, I don't know, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, whatever bands were like truly enormous when we were kids. And you did get this sense that nothing about their life was like my life. And that's okay. Like, I'm not buying a ticket to go see Led Zeppelin and have them relate to me. You know, I don't want them relating to me.
They fed something inside of us that was more aspirational, which was like, whether you're going to be a rock star or not, it's not the point. It was, I want to be something other.
I want to be something other. I want to see the world. I want to dream big dreams. Yes. So I get that ticket and I go to see probably the biggest like stadium show I ever saw was I did see the Rolling Stones at Soldier Field.
Oh, you did? Like, wow. Okay.
Yeah, like 1998. Like it was.
Oh, so way late. Way later. Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, way later. But like they were still huge. It was before Soldier Field got renovated. I don't know. The spectacle of the whole thing was like really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, 98, though, they would have been what, in their 70s at that point?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like 104 now, you know. But yeah. And even in 98, I was like, how are they doing this? And to some degree, like, why are they doing this?
Yeah.
They
need to do it. Is that yeah, the correct answer?
Yeah.
They need to do it. And by need, they don't need to at all. They just need, like, they don't need to financially. They just need to because it's the only thing they know how to do, you know?
Right. They don't know how to be not famous. Exactly. You know what I mean? Which, okay, there's a movie I would watch. I would watch the movie about, and this is basically the movie that I tried to write, which was Silverdome, but like the movie about the person who used to be famous that now has to deal with not being famous.
Yeah.
Or trying to have a normal life or whatever. Yeah. I'm sure it's been done. I can't think of it off the top of my head. Can you?
It's so funny because right when you said that, it sounded so familiar. But I,
to me too, yeah.
Because, you know, here's what's so funny. So this is what's so weird about music is like when an artist gets like a type of like fame or like, or let's just make it simple. When an artist has a hit that sells in the millions, and that thing just continues to get played around the world on radio. Well, number one, like that's enough to keep them like without having to work for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
That's how much money they make off of even one song. If they can get that, and I'm not just talking about a hit where you hear it for like a couple months and it disappears. I'm talking like those hits that just have never stopped playing everywhere.
Yeah,
you
like
go.
It's socked
yeah.
in.
It's, you know? It's, I mean, yeah. Those guys end up making enough money. Their checks that they get in are enough to live off of for the rest of their lives. Wow. So I think it's almost impossible for someone that's had a hit that big to ever go back to not being known and having to kind of scrape from the bottom, you know. And I mean, unless they blow all their money and they go bankrupt. I mean, a lot of those guys do that. But I'm talking like the guys that just they have one foot in. They're there. They experience like. They experience some of it without getting all of it. And they literally go back down to zero and there's nobody around to help them anymore. Maybe they burn bridges or maybe, it could be all, but though that, I think that would be really fascinating.
So I thought of two movies.
Yeah.
One was Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler. Did you ever watch that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Kind of dark, kind of sad, but like really good. About a guy kind of like on the lowest rung of the ladder after having been famous. The other one.
Yeah, that was good.
This one's dumb and vapid, but it's kind of a fun movie. It's a music movie. It's a Hugh Grant thing called Music and Lyrics. Did you ever see that?
Gosh, I mean, I know the title.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw it. How long ago was it?
I want to say it was like 12 or 15 years old, but in the movie. This was kind of right after Hugh Grant's run of like good rom-coms. So like Notting Hill had come and gone.
Okay.
Love Actually had come and gone. And then he had this run where he was doing like.
It got pretty bad for him, right?
It got bad for him. And he was doing like these 89 minute forgettable things. But there was this one that we kind of like called Music and Lyrics where in the movie he had written like. The Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, that's right. No, I remember the premise for it. I didn't see it. It looked
cool. He was basically in the movie. He was in a band like Wham. And in the movie, they even had a name like Wham. And the other guy from Wham got like super famous in the movie. And he stayed not famous. And like he really never did another thing. And when you meet him in the movie, he's living in like a kind of a normal apartment. He's got a manager, but his manager is basically like checked out and he's playing like the Catalina wine mixer. You know what I mean? Like he's playing gigs that are like the Hartford City County Fair.
But I love the realism of that because it's not like they don't have him in the gutter. He's just living like he's doing okay. He's just not at the top.
Yeah. Like he's making a normal living and like, and the movie was not meant to be poignant. But it was actually to me really poignant.
I got to see it, man.
Yeah. You see him like, setting up his keyboard at the Catalina wine mixer, you know what I mean? And you're like, you're invited to go, is that sad or is it respectable?
Right.
And I landed in a place where it was respectable. I'm like, he's doing music, he's getting paid. And in the movie, so like the plot point of the movie is he gets an opportunity to write a song for like the Taylor Swift
figure. Oh, okay, gotcha.
So like it gives him a chance to become big again.
Yeah.
I actually thought of like the seminal movie in this kind of space. It's this British director. He's made three movies and they're all about music, and I can't think of his name, but the one that I really loved, it takes place in New York. Mark Ruffalo plays this producer who, like, stop me if you've heard or if you've seen this movie.
No, I'm trying to, it's ringing a bell.
Yeah, Ruffalo plays a producer.
Yeah.
He in the movie, he had created like the Death Row Records of the movie.
Okay.
Like he had just launched all these amazing like rap acts, but it had been like 20 years. And
yeah.
He's kind of like, he's an alcoholic. He's down on his luck. Yeah. And this is not vapid at all. This is like a real movie. And in the first scene, he's in a bar and this girl plays an acoustic set. And he's like, I want to produce you. I want to make a record. And the girl is somebody. She was from all those Johnny Depp movies on the boat. She was the girl from that. But, but anyway, it's a really great movie. And it's kind of about this guy deciding to make a record with this girl and putting his life back together and like getting his artistic life back together and deciding to like try again. The movie's called Begin Again. It's really good.
Oh, maybe I've heard of that. Oh gosh.
You should
man.
Watch that, baby. You should abso-freaking-lutely watch it.
It wasn't that long ago. Was it 5 years?
No, it wasn't. I want to say 5 years. Yeah. 5, 6, 7 years, something like that.
Okay.
But, yeah, give it a watch, dude. I think you would love it.
Well, I love Ruffalo. So I mean, Ruffalo, Ruffalo. I never know how to say his name.
I don't know either. Ruffalo. But yeah, he does a great job at playing like a 51-year-old guy who has to like decide if he's going to try anymore.
I mean, I feel like that dude has been 51 his entire career.
Dude, he has. Yeah, he's been 51 for the last 25 years.
Seriously. Sure. I mean, he doesn't. He like has just always looked the same.
Even when he was young, he kind of had a dad bod.
He still looked 51. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he hits at that level of movie star that where he doesn't have a lot of the standard tools. But it's still the Ruffalo thing really works.
I know. And I think what we're describing, because like, you know, to attach that to what we were talking about with Journey, like a minute ago, it's like, there's something about the people that for all intents and purposes, like, you know, they're not David Bowie. They don't have this. They don't have this, like this amazing talent. They're not like super eccentric. They didn't literally create new worlds that everybody else in the world now is sort of like is sort of benefiting from and, you know, derivative of. But just these people that like they're like the working man version of anything else that's like super artistic and successful. And for some reason, and maybe it's because of what I came from or the family I came from. It's just I'm so drawn to that. That's
too.
Fascinating to me.
Yeah. Like when we lived in Michigan when I was young, like a young adult, we used to drive around and we would see these billboards for like, you know, oh, Journey's going to be playing at the, you know, Soaring Eagle Casino or whatever. And we used to kind of like snicker and roll our eyes like, oh, haha, that's sad. But now I see that and I'm like, that's pretty cool. You know, like they're working, they're making money, they get to play in front of an audience. Like there are people that still care about what they do. I'm like, I'm in. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's a function of being on the older side of trying to do something artistic for 20 years and realizing how hard it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you, and this is not like a woe is us thing at all, but like you realize not every book is a bestseller. Not every record is a bestseller. It's hard to make a movie, you know, whatever your particular space is. It's not like falling off a log to play arenas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And moreover, it's probably not going to happen ever.
Yeah, correct.
The likelihood of it happening is like, you know, getting hit by lightning or
There's
whatever.
There's just that 0.1% that everybody has heard. Like, you know, when you talk about household names, it's 0.1%. And then there's everybody else that is just doing it just like everybody else does it.
Yeah.
And they just didn't get the breaks or they didn't get that particular person that saw them and said, hey, I, I, I do have the ability to like get you to this next level. And what you realize at the end of the day is like, that's such a huge part of it. Like in all these different artistic, you know, like venues, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the cliche is like behind every successful person is somebody you've never heard of that propelled them to the top. And totally. I'm not sure with all the entertainment cliches out there, I don't know that anyone is more true than that.
I agree.
Because at the end of the day, you know, people that aren't involved in these things always say, oh, but they were great musicians. Oh, but they were great actors. It's like, yeah, but when has that ever had anything to do with it, right? Because there's a million great actors and a million great musicians right now that you will have never heard of. And that has nothing to do with it. It's just the reason why you like the people that you like because you've heard of them and everybody else has heard of them is because there was somebody behind them that said, I am going to work my life away to make you somebody that is in everybody's living room. And they do it, and it worked. And you know what? Some people like spend their lives doing that and it still doesn't happen. But then there's that 1% where they had somebody behind them that gave their life away to make them large, and it worked and they did it. And it's not really that complicated at the end of the day. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of complexities with how all that happens, but it really is just because somebody, somebody had somebody that said, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get
I'm
you.
Going all in. To
I'm
give
going all
you
in.
The big push.
100%.
And I know how to do it. You know what I 100%. Mean? And that was what I wanted out of this Elvis movie. Like, I wanted that story.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just didn't deliver that. But yeah, I mean, even in the podcast space, dude, I had somebody tell me, and this person was the kind of person that looks at statistics and all that and cares about it. And this person was like, you guys are in the top, like, 99.7th percentile of successful podcasts. And I was like, well, you could.
It's hard not to laugh at that.
Yeah, I know. I laughed, and I'm like, well, you could have fooled me because I haven't seen a dollar for this thing for a long, long time. And they were aghast. Like, their perception of it was that, you know, we were making all this money. And you know, part of it is nobody knows how this model works.
Well, and baby, that's it. The big word there is perception. And, like, it's like people that you think are bigger than they are because they've had a little more visibility. And then you get down into it and you realize, oh, they're... Like, again, the only way that we typically know how to judge success is through, like, cash, right?
Yeah.
So it's a monetary thing. And so if we don't, you know, it's so funny to think that there are, it's weird. It works this way in music. There are really, really famous people that don't make a lot of money. And you'd be surprised when you find out that they don't make a lot of money. And then there's people behind the scenes that you've never heard of in your life. And you know, they got like, they're purchasing their sixth house overseas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, the way it works is so interesting. It's so different. But again, the only way we are able to judge if somebody's famous typically is because they've made a lot of money and that status like gets them into the public eye.
Right.
And so it's so interesting, right? Because like it only exists for just a tiny few people. And from somebody's perspective of thinking, well, gosh, you know, everybody, you know, they'll say statements like this. Everybody I know listens to The Rant. I've had people say that to me. Yeah. All my friends listen to The Rant. So therefore, because them and their, let's be honest, like seven friends listen to The Rant. Right. Yeah. Like therefore to them, it's something that's larger than life. And we're like, well, I mean, certainly, you know, certainly like we've grown this thing over the years. But I mean, dude, we didn't just sign a multi-million dollar deal with like Monster Energy, you know, who's sponsoring the podcast and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Right. So I don't know. We're not Joe Rogan, right? We didn't just sign we didn't just sign a $100 million deal with Apple, you know?
Dude. So let me ask you this. I actually have two questions. The first question is, when those moments happen, is your greater impulse to like continue the sort of charade of we're successful? Like are you more interested in like maintaining the facade of success, or is your impulse to like kind of pat that person on the shoulder and go, well, actually, you know, we haven't seen a dollar in 6 months, you know, like,
I never get that real just with people that like are saying, yeah. Hey, I like the show. My name's, Fred or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It depends on the question, right? Most of the time, you know, it depends how deep they want to go.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, sometimes they'll ask me questions like, so, you know, I know you're pastor. I know you do this, you do that, but like, is podcasting your main revenue source?
You know, you're like, I certainly hope not.
No, right. Yeah. Exactly. So if it gets that pointed, I'll be like, oh gosh, no, not at all. We bring in a little income from this, but it's just supplemental, you know, but I won't get into details by it. And, Pipe really is our business manager for the rant, and he really takes care of all the fiscal details of our operation.
Fiscal.
And it's true. He actually does, you know.
He does. I mean, yeah.
The moments where it has made us a living wage, and then the months, and then all the other months of the year where it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's Pipe. And so I always just sort of defer to Pipe because he gets his head in that stuff more than me. So,
dude, the rant money is my walking around money, and I miss it.
Yeah.
Like, it's starting to dwindle, and I need it back in there so I can feel like I got walking around money, you know?
Yeah, you got your money clip. It's what you need a money clip for.
I got my little clip.
Right?
I got my little
cachiche.
Like, yeah, like my little no conscience spending money. But,
there you go.
One day we'll have that again, but
you know, you never, one can dream, baby. Yeah,
one can dream.
One
that's right.
Can dream.
Speaking of dreaming, we never got into our main topic.
I know.
We should probably wrap this, but that was a good. That was a good like menu of topics that you sent last night. Maybe we'll have to do another ep.
Let me tell everybody real quick. So yeah. I sent you, I call it, most people would say bucket list, but I just said a before we die list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I just feel like is edgier. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it is.
But
yeah, it's edgier. Brings in death. You know. Right.
Brings in death. And like, what do you like? What's the one goal you'd like to accomplish? What's the place you'd like to visit? What's the book you'd like to write? So yeah, let's get into that next time with Pipe.
Let's do it. Yeah, I think that would resonate. And I actually think I was thinking about the list last night. I think we're all three going to have very different answers. Some will be very concrete. Some will be very conceptual.
Yeah, very, very.
And everything in between. Yeah. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, we'll just do that with Pipe. Don't forget, because like a whole week will happen and we'll forget.
Yeah, but, for sure. We'll do it.
Baby, this has been fun. We've wandered to and fro throughout some like music stuff, some movie stuff, some fame stuff. We have not dropped in either of the other two ad breaks that we were supposed to drop in.
I mean, you know, there was a couple of pauses there, right? They can fit them in.
Baby, we've done what we always do on this program, doggone it. We've wandered to and fro. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hello, this is Dr. Doug Grotheis, host of Truth Tribe, where we seek the truth through reason and evidence about what matters most. And we are not tribal, since truth is for everyone. Please join me at the Truth Tribe as I discuss the reasons for Christian faith, the Christian worldview, and moral issues such as abortion and gender ideology. To listen now, go to lifeaudio.com or search Truth Tribe on your favorite podcast app.